students of all ages around the world are getting ready to pick up books and pens again for another year. And for many in the post-secondary and graduate ranks, it will be a period of stress related to the question of what next after all this hard work. For many, the step into a first job after college or university is precarious, where in many cases it's a matter of taking on any decent or temporary position simply to pay the bills. But in an age where companies are thinking tirelessly about building strong teams and providing better working environments, it is still very difficult for employers to find the right talent, and for talented graduates to find the right fit. Job fairs and job boards have long been a tired approach. Enter Bright Network, a UK-based platform that matches graduates with jobs, an online portal making it easier for everyone. Since the platform was launched back in 2013, it's been used by almost 200,000 graduates across the UK and by more than 300 global businesses, including Bloomberg, Dyson, Goldman Sachs, and KPMG. Bright Network's founder is James Uffendell, who began his entrepreneurial career by helping young students get into Oxford and Cambridge. He set up a successful venture, but after a few years had graduates asking, "Can you also help me find a job?" And so he created Bright Network. And along with working to grow his own company and its reach, James is on a mission to correct a major skills crisis in the UK and to help businesses big and small to create thriving, more diverse workplaces. You're listening to The Entrepreneurs with me, Daniel Bache. For today's program, I sat down with James at Midori House to hear the story of Bright Network.
Mum and dad both left school at 16, didn't go to university. My mum was a secretary, dad was a shepherd. So growing up, my work experience was literally pulling a little sheep out of big sheep. That was kind of what I did, and went off to university. And I was at a good university, but there was no kind of real kind of careers advice, guidance. Family didn't have any connections. There was no kind of like professional services kind of background. Last year at university, I was like, what am I going to do when I leave? What is that kind of segue into the world of work? And because I had kind of always thought it might be kind of fun to start a business, I thought I'm going to set up something doing the only thing I know how to do, age 20 in my kind of student room / dorm room, which is to get into university. So I set up an organisation that helps students apply to university. So absolutely kind of almost like defaulted to the entrepreneurial routes through kind of lack of career support in my background.
So it sounds like you found a bit of a window, a bit of a niche that you thought you wanted to go down. But tell me about Oxbridge Applications. Is that your first venture?
Yeah. So my first venture called Oxbridge Applications. Growing up as a kid, I'd been kind of selling sweets out of my locker. And my mum always used to tell kind of Conkers to kids, and there was a Conker tree down the road. So when I got into university, wasn't sure kind of what I was going to do with my career. And I saw a huge gap in the market because my school hadn't sent many people to Oxford and Cambridge. So I was at Oxford, and basically what I realised, and remember this is like roughly 20 years ago now, a lot of students arriving at Oxford and Cambridge were coming from kind of big kind of private schools where they, kind of public schools where they had a kind of machine in place that was sending all these applicants, all these people to Oxford and Cambridge. What I thought was actually I'd managed to get in. I'd had an amazing teacher at my school who'd given me like really good support and advice. And I thought there's actually a really important thing to do here to educate students when they apply to university and make sure they make the most of their application. Going into my third year university, I founded the company and I started talking to my friends about why they thought they got into Oxford, obviously friends at Cambridge I had, and trying to understand what made the difference, because they're all super bright, everybody who applies, but why do some kids get in and some people don't? So I had this kind of idea about this kind of wonderful kind of thing I could launch, and I left university and I then wrote to all the schools, said, "Hey, I can help your kids get into Oxford and Cambridge," and none of them replied. So I was a bit like, what am I going to do here? And which is a bit of a problem, because I was entrepreneur 21, I'd signed up a contract with somebody who's going to kind of help me deliver the skills program, and I was on the hook to him for about 10 grand and to go and deliver the skills program. But I didn't have any suppliers. So this is a bit of a problem, given I'd signed this bit of paper. Obviously, kind of what I probably do now is renegotiate the contracts. So then I thought, what am I going to do? So then I wrote to these schools and I said, okay, I will help your kids get into Oxford and Cambridge. If I don't help them, I will give you all your money back. And that was absolutely phenomenal. We booked out kind of straight away. kind of, I guess, going back to that whole idea of listening to your clients, because back then I was a 21-year-old, no track record. They're obviously thinking, who is this person? And then built relationships over 300 schools as the business developed. And I exited that business to a private investor about 5 years ago. It was an absolutely phenomenal baptism of fire, I suppose you'd have it, in terms of getting something started age 20, 21, and then kind of building it and then eventually exiting it.
It sounds like at the beginning it was a lot of just cold calling and knocking on doors and trying to build that network. 300 schools at the end. That's quite incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. And at Bright Network now, we work with over 250 top employers, and it's been the similar kind of mission. But absolutely, you can never underestimate the power of just kind of persistence and knocking on doors, kind of being relentless. Because I think as an entrepreneur, if you've got a great product and you've got something that you fundamentally believe in and know that works, and you really want to solve the problem, and obviously the entrepreneurs kind of solve problems all the time, kind of being relentless with these organizations and these enterprise clients. So with the schools, we fundamentally knew our service helped get their students when they're applying to Oxford and Cambridge. And the schools who got on board obviously then used us again and again and again. So the power of kind of repeat businesses can be critical. So it was a similar type of challenge when I started Bright Network. I knew essentially we had a network of the very, very best talents. Firms wanted the best talents. Obviously, they do their own current activity, but when you bring a new product to market, we just kind of really insistent in terms of kind of opening up conversations with these suppliers. And they've paid off. I mean, some of our employers, literally, and the business has been going kind of 5 years now, some of our employers who have really, really close relationships now, you know, it's quite funny looking back, because some of them have said no for maybe like 2-3 years, and then obviously you get in there, form the really great relationships, and then they love the service and they buy more. So I guess the resilience around B2B sales, it's very hard, and it is just, you just have to keep going. It is just kind of being super resilient. I heard a great phrase once, it's hard to kick a puppy, right? So if you're just nice and resilient, people get frustrated, obviously, if you're kind of too salesy, etc. But if you're genuinely about solving your clients' problems, then that generally seems to work.
I want to just hear about the market you saw and the origins of Bright Network, because I imagine this came a little bit before you left your other venture.
Yeah, 100%. So we were playing around with the idea before I left the other venture, because what had happened was I'd started Oxford Applications. I got very lucky in terms of my kind of work experience before starting it. I kind of worked in a pub, so I didn't really know anything about business. All I knew is I had this idea. The business had grown because there was kind of phenomenal demand for the service. We were first mover. We were able to put a load of kind of moats around the business in terms of protecting it. But you're absolutely right then. And what happened is that then the students are coming back to me saying, great, you helped me apply to university. Either they got into Oxford or Cambridge, or they hadn't, in which case they were still bright students. And then they were saying, but what do I do now? 3, 4, 5 years later, after I'd helped them, they were saying, what do I do now? And I thought, surely somebody's fixed this issue around kind of talent, the world of work, connectivity, education. And I went back to my own experience at university, and part of the problem was you arrive on campus and big brands will be marketing to you, big employers will be saying, hey, we're X. And you've never heard of X. So your first question is, what's X? And then it's like, oh, X is an investment bank. And then you're like, what's an investment bank? Because you don't know, right? Because you're 18, 19. So I thought the play was obvious. I was like, surely there's something we can do where we give these students the very best advice, information, help and support. Because you see a lot coming out through our Bright Network research is that students don't feel supported and advised around their careers. And then for the employers, we basically help them create the workforce of tomorrow. Some of these employers are hiring 1,000 graduates a year, and it kind of just seemed obvious. So that's why we started it properly 5 years ago.
When I first heard about Bright Network, I had this idea that perhaps it would look as the digital version of what you kind of just described, the job fair. Is this the modern sort of version of this in the way that we live our lives online?
Absolutely. So it's using all the themes we see around kind of personalization, data, technology to give the students really hyper kind of personalized support in terms of what they do with their career next. So absolutely, we are digitalizing essentially how kind of talent connects with the world of work.
When students are leaving university, they're looking for what's the next step, the eternal question, what am I going to do? How do you actually facilitate that for them? Because in past, I imagine it was job boards, knocking on doors and casting the net really wide, but you can help actually really match people with the right places.
100%. So because we see where our members go, so it's all completely free for Bright Network members, but you obviously get them when they're roughly about 18, first year at university. and then we're able to track them and then see where they end up getting employed. So what you can then start to do is saying, in say a student gets a job at a top consultancy or a top media firm, and you're then able to start profiling them and say, okay, look, this type of graduate got this type of job. And then using kind of AI and machine learning, you're then able to kind of run profiles and say to that first year who arrives, you could go and get a great job doing this at this media firm because you have a similar type of profile to this. So you can be that trusted advisor. Now, then in terms of social mobility, access to talent, remember we have huge problems kind of in the country around kind of social mobility. And if you're born into a kind of a low income background, obviously your chance of becoming a high income earner are very low. So obviously even if you get yourself to university, who's giving you that support? So absolutely using those kind of advice nudges, that's what I call them, and the type of content you can put in front of those students to guide them on their career paths, and also then having access to the firms. The firms want a wider, diverse, more kind of pool of access to talent. So it's something like, I think a recent survey said of the FTSE 350, only 12 kind of female CEOs, for example. So we're able to take our audience and say, right, you want to get to this type of talent, for example, kind of BAME talents, and we can segment our audience and put those students more accurately in front of employers, which drives down employer costs because they are targeting exactly the types of candidates that they maybe want to get after.
And tell me how this works in a business sense for you, how it's actually monetized.
It's a great question. So it's all free for the students. So we've got over 190,000 members on the network who come on and join it for free. And the firms pay for all the services that we supply to the students. And the firms pay because they make fantastic hires from the network. So it's a really lovely, satisfying model for us because we're helping the students fulfill their potential and their ambition, aspiration. And we're getting great commercial results for the firms and they are paying us for it. And we get them generally such great results that they will then spend more money with us each year, which is very powerful. And as part of that, we've just kind of done a 2.5 million Series A venture round to kind of fuel our growth. So yeah, very exciting times.
I imagine you saw a place where this could fit in, this type of sort of outsourcing a service of really narrow targeting the right type of talent. Because on this show, the idea of the future of work comes up all the time and the importance of building a good team. But you really whittle that down for companies. You make it happen.
Yeah, absolutely. So nobody needs more applications. So there's roughly about 75 applications for every graduate role overall. They then have to all be screened and assessed. So we're all about kind of helping companies adapt kind of with the future of work. So as we know, kind of rapid shifts happening around kind of technology, and there's been conversations kind of obviously around kind of potentially looking to the 4-day week, introduce the flexible working, obviously absolutely critical. So KPMG have just introduced flexible working, etc. What we kind of are really all about is actually helping, as you said, get the firms to that talent kind of quicker, sharper, kind of more effectively. And there is a huge skills gap, obviously, in terms of around the future of work at the moment. So there was an increase of 24% last quarter in the shortage of particularly kind of technical talent. And we find on Bright Network, only 50% of our technical talent actually wants to go and work in digital technical roles. So, absolutely. In terms of those themes, we are 100% around them.
I get the sense that companies these days are having to adapt to talent a little bit and the way that they operate. In the past, it would seem if I went to work for a large corporation, say, I would maybe have to adapt my lifestyle a little bit. But it's sounding like companies are having to sort of change the way they do things, not only in hiring, but in the workplace itself.
Absolutely. And this obviously ties into the themes of the millennial generation and now obviously kind of Gen Z coming through. And a recent survey of our Bright Network members, so 68%, because we asked them what they value and what's the most important thing to them. We do a lot of research with them. And the company culture and driver is the number one thing that they value. And that's kind of more important than pay or reputation. What this generation loves is they love autonomy. So being given responsibility and say, you know, right, please go and kind of execute that. They hate micromanagement.
Right.
They want flexibility. So at Bright Network, we, as an example, I mean, we're small, right? 32 people headcounts, but we have unlimited holiday. We have kind of remote working. So genuinely, you just want to achieve our objectives. And they really respond well to that because they all want to help us build the organization. And generally, as everyone's hitting their objectives, it doesn't matter how much holiday they take or where they're working in the world. As long as we're hitting our objectives, that's all that matters.
How do you see the idea of retaining talent? Because that comes up on the show all the time, and building a team. And I talk to a lot of startup founders who see it very differently because they work in quite a different culture where it's they may not discourage entrepreneurial thinking, where people may go off and do their own venture after a few years of helping grow a company. But with a larger company, a lot that you deal with, how is their approach to that?
A third of our students, as part of kind of company culture, they rate kind of friendly and respectful environments as being kind of absolutely key. I think one thing I've seen work very successfully in terms of retention is because we've shifted, obviously, from this world where you sign up to an organization for, you know, 20, 30 years, and the average graduate will be in role for about 2 years. I think Reid Hoffman's concept of the alliance is absolutely fascinating. I'm not sure if that's kind of been mentioned before on the show, but essentially a series of short-term kind of missions where it's very clear, you know, you come to the company, you're basically going to do this, he calls them kind of 18-month kind of tour of duty. You will do this, this, this for the company. In return, the company will do this, this, this for you. We're making this short-term alliance. So it might be you're going to go and launch a new product. You're going to go and launch this marketing campaign. Whatever it is, you get the skills back. And then about 6 months before, we come up with the next kind of tour of duty, essentially. So I've seen that kind of concept working really well, and particularly in kind of high growth businesses, works really, really well. And I think what's going on at the moment is, obviously, with the explosion of the digital economy, and particularly in London, you've got a lot of these businesses, like $2.5 billion of venture capital into London last year, sorry, maybe the year before, but all this money coming in, and the competition for talent is intense. So the newer businesses are coming up with loads of kind of cool, new, interesting stuff. But a lot of it is unproven because it's mainly conceptual. The older businesses are feeling the challenge. However, a lot of what they do works, right? Like, you've got to remember, a lot of these big corporations, they're very successful. They get in really great people. They achieve kind of really, really good things. So I think there's a real opportunity for the two sectors to learn off, which is something we try and facilitate at Bright Network as much as possible, because we are working with kind of high growth kind of startups who want to access our talent, but also the big corporates.
You've talked a lot about the incredible talent in this country, but you've also presented Bright Network as sort of addressing the UK skills crisis. What do you mean by that?
So that is we see that as an education piece around the skills crisis. Roughly 500,000 graduates a year, every year in the UK economy, but 50% of graduate employers don't fill all their vacancies. So they go out with jobs and they don't fill the vacancies they need to hire. So that, we think, is a skills crisis. The way we're trying to tackle it at Bright Network is you obviously get the core intenders. You know, you arrive at 18, you're at Imperial College London, you're doing computer science, and you know you want to go and work for an Amazon or a Google. You're absolutely fine. But what about the students who don't know what they can do with their career? We see it as a supply side problem. So the demand for the talent is there. There's not enough supply because students don't know what they can do with their life. So at a macro level, it's all about upskilling the students so that they know about what they can then go and do. So great example, in investment banking, has a big challenge attracting kind of high quality female candidates for various kind of reasons. And then to take that student on a journey and be like, right, they come onto our platform. They might have kind of sent them an article about, you know, what five things you can do with a French degree. So you might have a female student kind of reading French, and that female student may never have thought that she could go into investment banking or one of the kind of careers because it's never been put in front of her. So it's that education piece. So rather than companies just marketing their jobs, actually telling and informing the students about what these jobs are and bringing education to recruitment and using technology and data, that is incredibly exciting for me.
How have you seen a change in how employers are getting the talent that they need to grow?
One thing that's attracted me to the industry, which when I started Bright Network, a lot of people were kind of a bit baffled. They were like, oh, why are you going into graduate recruitment? You know, as if it's not really kind of worth it as an industry. And one of the things that drew me into it was I could see a lot of market inefficiencies. So waste, you know, employers spending lots of money kind of flashing their brand across the across general campus. It was almost as if sometimes like they're trying to sell donuts or something, right? They kind of do their marketing graduate programs and schemes. So what we've seen happen, which was good because it was tied into the business plan, is we've seen employers really start to think about individuals. Okay, so how do you zone in on that individual you want? You're going to get lots of applications like this, but if you want applications like this, how do you get to that person? How do you treat them as an individual? And then how do you engage them? So again, we're taking a lot of spend off the old job boards because the job boards just send out kind of generic job ads that aren't personalized. So to answer your question, two things happening. One, they're going a lot earlier. so that they are kind of essentially going after first-year students now, which is happening a lot more than it was 5 years ago. And it's often led by the industry leaders who will just kind of start this soon, who are often actually the American firms who are a bit more kind of assertive about the talent they want. And then the second thing that we're seeing in terms of that is, yeah, this more kind of hyper-targeting in terms of the real kind of needles in the haystack. How do you get to that kind of absolutely exceptional student? Because there was some research, 1% of employees apparently add 28% of the value. So it comes down from the top. It's the number one concern. There's a Harvard Business Review thing saying it's the talent is the number one thing that CEOs think about. People make the difference and they drive that down and they want to get the absolute kind of rock stars from our network ASAP and ahead of their competitors.
If we look at the jobs market, when you first started thinking about this and what the company could be and compare that to today for a graduate student, yes. Has that changed a lot, the job prospects and how we're matching people with jobs and confidence we can take when leaving school?
Over the last 5 years, there's actually so much more to be kind of grateful for now, you know. And I guess if we're talking about the UK, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the UK economy is in a far better position than it was 5 years ago. And I also think there's been huge shifts, obviously, in kind of diversity inclusion campaigns as well, which is, again, really, really exciting in terms of that area. So, yes, absolutely. I think there kind of has definitely been shifts. It feels like my read on it is that firms are putting a lot more effort into being broader, which is great in terms of kind of who they want to go after. Because I remember a few years ago, firms were still just recruiting on kind of A-levels, right? And obviously some firms still do that. And they say, look, we do just want people with those academics, which is obviously absolutely fine. Opening up and saying, hey, well, look, you know, this kid here might have 3A stars, but he went to like one of the top private schools in the UK. But there's a kid over here and he's got, say, like, you know, BBC and he's not gone to good university. But actually, roughly, I think if you go to private school, you get about twice the resources invested in education than if you go to a state school. So isn't it incredible that this kid here has managed to get BBC despite having half the resources invested? And then how might he perform when he gets to university and when we bring him into our organisation around those values in terms of like drive, motivation, determination, etc., etc.? So I'd say the big shift has been broadening and opening out in terms of who firms want to communicate with. And we've seen a lot of our partners drop kind of academic requirements, which is very exciting because it opens up a broader pool of talent for them, which is good.
In your first venture, you were trying to get people into Oxford and Cambridge that may not, I think, have had the privilege or the access to get there. Is there Yes. a thread to your business today where you're trying to match people with good jobs that might not have those things, as you say, might not have the access?
You've nailed it, absolutely. That is exactly it. And I think what makes us so happy is when we take a member who doesn't come from that kind of background where they've got the right connections and we've helped them, advise them, and they get their role. And absolutely, that's what was so satisfying, kind of the first venture in terms of getting students into university. And then what becomes incredibly powerful is in that community effect. When that right network member gets their job and they're grateful to us, how they contribute back is they then kind of will help the next generation below. So they will share their story, send the elevator back down. And I think you have hit a thread there, because I think it goes back to growing up. I didn't have that kind of network around me. And it was kind of almost something I always thought this kind of like should exist. I like to think I was hopefully, you know, driven and hungry and wanted to get things done in life and go somewhere. But I didn't have a network kind of around me. So I always kind of felt like it was a bit of a gap. That's what we were seeking to build with Bright Network.
You talked about maybe needing to take your focus off the small things and the small details if you're going to be able to continue to grow this company successfully. I'm just curious about how the journey has been for you in the last few years and how you've enjoyed this.
I realized about three to four years ago, I had a massive gap in my management skills. I could do the entrepreneur thing. I could run around, make noise, get making things happen. But in terms of the raw management skills, and I think this actually ties into the productivity puzzle a bit for the UK and why it takes us five days to do as much work as it takes the, you know, the French and the Germans 4 days. Like, why are we 20% less productive? And I think that could be kind of primarily due to management skills. I think we seem to be good at starting businesses in the UK, but sometimes maybe not that great at managing them. So I realized that I had a gap there. And it actually, when one of my mentors, basically, who I admire greatly, he said to me, James, people hate being micromanaged. And it really hit me there. And I thought, actually, you know what? I need to really kind of up my game here. Mm. So what I did two things. One, I got myself a coach, like a business coach, essentially, which I was always a bit skeptical of, because I thought, you know, who are these people? Why do they know what to do in a thing? Is it just a load of nonsense? But that's been really useful. The other thing I did was Goldman Sachs do a program called Goldman Sachs 10,000 Small Businesses, which I massively recommend. And it's for founder entrepreneurs to essentially give them a type of mini MBA experience. So it's run by, I think, kind of Oxford Business School and other business schools kind of get involved. It's really great learning. It's about 8 hours a week. You have to get onto it, but I was recommended it, and it's been absolutely phenomenal. And actually, the third thing I did in terms of to help myself develop was just getting lots and lots and lots of feedback from the people I worked with. What do they think I did well? What did I need to get better at? Those three things now have seemed to have made a transition, which means I've got people in place who can look after things. And one of the most satisfying things recently, I was kind of in, well, not, I was going to say satisfying, I was in hospital. It wasn't satisfying that I was in hospital, but I had basically a bit of a kind of an aggressive start to the year with a visit to A&E for various reasons. And basically, the business just continued running, which was great. And then last year, I took my first two-week holiday in about 6 years, and it was great. The business just kept on running. So building that kind of management leadership engine, which means that I'm kind of able to focus on growth, has been a really important thing to do.
For young graduates, people that are heading out into the workforce, they may know what they want to do. They may not have the exact idea of what they want to do. But what do you think is the best thing they can do for themselves?
Be curious. I think that is absolutely the number one thing I think they can do. The more inquisitive they are, and then the more they question kind of themselves and the world of work, the quicker they'll find what they want to do. So we spend something like 100,000 hours of our life working now. And as we all think, it's so critical to enjoy your work, right? We're going to be dust. We're all going to be dust for billions of years. We're all going to die. So if we're going to work, we might as well do something we enjoy. So I would say for new grads, it's so important to be inquisitive, because you're trying to you're trying to find out about yourself at that age. What are you great at? What are you bad at? What do you love doing? What do you hate doing? And that takes time. So one of the best things I ever did was a week of accountancy work experience. I was about 16 because it taught me I should definitely not be an accountant. So being curious, I think, is absolutely key. And then also understanding then your skill set and how it fits into the outside world and the jobs available, et cetera, et cetera. So I think the more they can be curious, read, talk to people, just grab people in different careers and say, hey, what do you love about your job? What do you hate about your job? Oh, if I wanted to get to where you are, what do I need to do? I think if they could be more inquisitive as they possibly can, that would be great.
Does that involve taking work for the sake of the experience? Because on the entrepreneurial side, we could say fail and fail fast, because you need that experience as a business owner. But if you're going to work for somebody else, is it important to take work just to have it before doing what you really want to do?
But I think by taking work, if you need to have it, and obviously there's a financial, can be a financial imperative there, I think that can help you find out what you want to do, if that makes sense. And again, it then comes down to a kind of a values thing about, you know, how much do you value money? How much do you value kind of loving what you want to do? The trade-offs, the choices, all those elements in terms of getting to that level of satisfaction. But I would say you can't beat experience in terms of getting that in. And actually, one of the guys at Bright Network, absolute kind of top performer, and one of the reasons I really admire him is, I think he's in his kind of mid-20s, and he was on a graduate program at a leading employer and basically thought, this isn't for me, I'm not enjoying it, and he wanted to join a high growth kind of entrepreneurial business, and he came to work for us, and he just kind of walked away from his graduate program because he wasn't enjoying it. So I think there's a point where you maybe should ask yourself, and actually if you're in your career, and say, if I know what I know now, would I be doing this job? Because you've got more information. I think experience helps you find out what you enjoy and what you don't enjoy. And then things like, you know, keeping lists of that and seeing themes as well is very important.
In so much as you can reveal, what's your plan for moving forward and growing the brand?
Continued focus on our core market. Kind of trying to act like being our kind of circle of competence, which is getting the best high quality graduates into the world's best employers. So that's what we're focused on. And within that, we're doing kind of three kind of primary elements. One is heavily investing in our technology, because that is what gives us a huge, huge, huge competitive advantage in terms of the matching part between the students and the graduates. Secondly, increasing the size of our network. So we're currently 190,000 members, and they are, each and every one of them is absolutely amazing. So we want to increase the size of that network more. And thirdly, building out those relationships. So we're very lucky in terms of the relationships we have with our kind of leading employers, making sure we continue to stay close to them. And I think one of the things that's critical as businesses grow is that kind of the entrepreneur becomes detached from the clients and solving that problem. And one of the things I'm really making sure I spend a lot of time on is talking to our members, what do they want more of, and talking to our clients and making sure all the time we are giving them great, hopefully great solutions.
That's all the time we have on today's program. Thank you very much to James Uffendale for coming in to share the story of Bright Network. Thanks as well to Kieran Matthew Banerjee, who mixed and edited this episode. I'm Daniel Bache. Thank you so much for listening, and goodbye.